When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And I'm back in the car, even though I said I was going to go back into the studio for the next one, but I'm on the road for the Kids Read Comics Super Fun Tour, and I just did a stop in Lyon Township, South Lyon, Michigan, which is about 40 minutes north of where I live, and then I have a subsequent stop in Fowlerville, which is another 40 minutes, west of South Lyon, so I don't know how far I am away from home right now, but I've got an hour in between workshops to cool down and try to get some work done, and what better work is there besides, well, the best work is comics, the next best work is talking about comics. And you would think that I would be tired of talking about comics after having taught a class this morning, just did an hour and a half workshop, and I'm getting ready to do another hour and a half workshop. But it seems it is an inexhaustible subject, after all. Art and storytelling is a fascinating topic that I can't see myself ever running out of steam on. And today's topic is going to be a little bit of a review on drawing on the iPad. I've been messing around with it. My wife has an iPad. I do not have one for myself. She has one that she generously allows me to use every once in a while to mess around with drawing applications. And I got GarageBand for that iPad as well. I plan on trying some recordings on it to see how that goes and see how it sounds, if it sounds any different than on the iPhone. But anyway, I expect that there are cartoonists out there who are, let's just say, enviously watching the work of other cartoonists who can afford these magical and revolutionary devices, and probably want to know really what it's like to work on this device. And the headline is that it's a mixed bag. And I want to qualify this statement by starting out saying that I am a cartoonist who doesn't paint that much. I do work in color. I think I'm an okay colorist. But I really learned to color digitally, mimicking a cell animated shading style. And I really, you know, before that, I got into making comics at a time when you did everything on the page and just photographed it. I mean, when I was first starting out working for Antarctic Press back in the 90s, I would actually mail them the pages for them to scan. And my earliest comics, when I was first started self-publishing, I would just draw everything on the page, lettering and all, and take it to Kinko's or a photocopy shop to get my books printed. So, you know, I never, and before that even, you know, I always knew I wanted to be, I wanted to make comics, but I always fancied myself a penciler first and everything else second. So I never really learned a whole lot about painting. And so I will say that drawing on the iPad, at least my limited exposure to it, it seems to work better if you have experience painting. Like, if you've seen the stuff Kevin Cross has done on his iPhone, it's gorgeous-looking stuff. I can't get my stuff to look like that, and I think it's partially due to the fact that Kevin has more experience painting and digitally coloring than I do. So again, I think that I want to make sure that I've couched this review in the with the notion that I'm a person who deals largely in lines first and thinks about color as an after coming after the line art has been firmly established, if that makes any sense. So I've been using Sketchbook Pro, which I forget how much it costs. I think it's $5 or $10 in the iOS App Store, something in that neighborhood. It's not a prohibitively expensive program, and it's actually pretty robust for what it is. And then I'm using the iPad 1, which even though the iPad 2 looks like a really interesting device, I still find the iPad 1 to be a really snappy and really fun and speedy machine. So I don't feel like a huge desire to get the iPad 2. I'd love one, but I'm not, you know, pinching my pennies to save up for one or anything like that. I got more important equipment to purchase for myself. But so I'm using Sketchbook Pro, and I've used a couple different styluses. And I've used the Boxwave stylus, which I mentioned on an Art and Story Extreme recently. And I've used the Pogo stylus. And both of these will be linked in the show notes. The Boxwave I liked better for the most part. Now let me describe the differences. Now the Boxwave stylus is a little bit of a chubbier stylus. A little bit, maybe it's about the thickness of, I want to say it's like about the thickness of an average crayon. The Pogo stylus is very thin. It's thinner than most pencils. So it depends, you know, part of what the decision-making process I would expect has to do with, like, what's your comfort level and what kind of... Actually, I would compare the Pogo stylus to a lot of inking brushes. It's very, very thin stick. The Boxwave has a rubber material on the end, which is very similar to, say... a plastic eraser. Like, if you ever used those polymer white erasers that you might have seen me using in some of my sketch videos, a bit of a very pliable, soft material. The Pogo stylus, on the other hand, has a piece of foam on the end, like almost like packing foam, like a very plasticky packing foam. And it has lots of, like a foam, it has lots of holes in it. It has a spongy kind of feel to it. And as a result of that, I mean, I haven't used it a whole lot. And by the way, both these styluses cost around $15. And the Boxwave one I haven't bought yet, but I'm going to because I liked it better. I got one on loan from somebody who was using it. The Pogo stylus I noticed, and that's the first one I bought, I noticed that it tends to work best if you keep the stylus almost at a perpendicular angle to the screen, which, as somebody who... you know, spends most of his time drawing analog, drawing on paper, is a little bit unnatural. I'm used to resting my hand on the page and keeping the pencil or pen at about a 45-degree angle, depending. I'm not used to drawing with my stylus or drawing tool at a 90-degree angle from the paper. That's a bit of a weird experience, but that's something that where I noticed the Pogo doesn't register on the iPad as readily if you have it at an angle. Also, this is another drawback of working on a digital device, especially one with a touch interface like the iPad. It's tricky to rest your hand on the screen. You kind of have to keep your hand up and off the paper, as it were. I know a lot of artists do work that way because they're for fear of smudging their stuff, but what I usually do is I just throw it on a piece of paper over top of whatever I'm working on to make sure I don't smudge anything. There's also gloves you can get. I suppose I could try something like that, get one of those gloves that people wear with the fingertips cut out in order to protect the paper from smudging. It would probably prevent the Sketchbook Pro app from registering your hand touch as an actual stroke on the screen. Now the Boxwave stylus, going back to that, it does allow you to work at more natural angles when you're drawing, which I liked a lot. And I noticed that when drawing on glass, having a bit of a rubber, the rubber tip gives you a little bit more feedback, which feels a little bit more natural to somebody who's used to drawing on paper a lot. So that's my review of those two different styluses. I prefer the Boxwave, but the Pogo works pretty good too. Now, in terms of drawing line art, the response that you get drawing in Sketchbook Pro, I'll restart the iPad and make sure I don't launch any other apps, so all the RAM is dedicated, or at least most of the RAM is dedicated just to that app, it tends to be pretty responsive. Sometimes if you're drawing really fast, you'll get a little bit of a lag. In other words, I'll draw the stroke, and I'll see the stroke happen about maybe a tenth of a second afterwards, which... you know, somebody's going to say, well, it's a tenth of a second, Jers. What are you getting uptight about? Well, there's no delay when I draw on paper. So as somebody who draws on paper a lot, it is a little bit disconcerting sometimes to see there be even the slightest lag between what I've drawn on the screen and what stroke I've placed on the screen and seeing what happens after that. The big negative to using Sketchbook Pro or any digital drawing device on the iPad is, as many of us know, there's no pressure sensitivity. And as somebody who's also spent what, how many years have you been using it? I've been using, drawing tablets, the Wacom Digitizer, since about 2003. So going on 8 years now, I've been using these things. And I've become absolutely hooked on pressure sensitivity. I'm just used to it. It's an experience that I kind of expect when I'm drawing digitally. And not having that does slow things down for me, at least for now. And again, I think about Kevin's work on his iPhone drawings that he was doing, his iPhone paintings, I should say. And I've seen the way he colors. And after seeing that, I can see how it might come naturally to him because he paints in these big splotches and sort of edits the splotches down and sort of sculpts them after the fact, which is something I'm not used to at all. Working in a cel-shaded style, relying largely on the lasso tool in Photoshop, which you may have seen in some of my Photoshop videos on the Art and Story Supreme site. So that is a little bit troublesome because I constantly have to go back into the tool palette in Sketchbook Pro to select different size brushes and keep adjusting my brush sizes to get different kinds of line values. Now, this is the reason that I love the Crow Quill and the analog brush so much is because line value comes naturally just through pressure, as does line value when you're working digitally with something like Photoshop or Painter with a Wacom tablet. Is that I just press a little harder and I get a little thicker line value. Working with the iPad and Sketchbook Pro, I would say is much more analogous to working with fixed width line tools like a mechanical pencil, like Microns, Rapidograph pens. If you enjoy inking with Microns, I think that you'll find the working on Sketchbook Pro to be very natural. I haven't inked with a Micron in years. I really don't enjoy using that tool for the sheer fact of having to stroke a line several times in order to get different line values out of it, or switching tools to get different line values. I don't enjoy that kind of experience. I like a tool that can do a lot of different things, a multitasker, so to speak. And then there is the iPad, Sketchbook Pro rather, I think this is actually more indicative of the iPad environment, is having one screen and no live tool palettes while you're working. You only got 10 inches, so I totally understand why they would hide the tool palettes and make you have to go to them in order to access different tools or to change your ink color, change your brushes, and so on. Because with only a 10-inch diagonal screen, there's not a lot of real estate for drawing. It's still substantially larger than a smartphone, but you don't want to clutter that up with tool palettes. But again, as somebody who's used to the Photoshop environment where my tool palettes are all just there all the time and I can just move over to the right to access them or move over to the left to access them, I found it to be a little bit clumsy. And this is, I don't have a ton of experience using this yet, but just my first blush is that I find it a little bit clumsy to have to constantly open up tool palettes in order to change all these different settings. I miss, when I'm working on the iPad, I miss that kind of Photoshop immediacy of just moving over to a tool palette. So, is the iPad a production tool? Yes, indeed, I think it is. But man, you got to learn a little, sort of a new workflow if you're used to working on paper and working in the digital media that we've had for the past, 20-something years. There's a bit of a learning curve in getting used to that kind of a workflow. And I've seen other people like Danny Jones of DannyDraws.com. She works very naturally in that environment. But it also, it depends on the kind of style you want to work in. Again, talking about Kevin Cross, Danny Jones, they work in these very kind of lush, painterly styles when they color, at least when they color on these devices. Again, that's not a coloring style that I'm used to. So I'm going to put the art in this post of the Mossman character comp that I did. I thought, well, given that I can't get the art to look exactly the way I want it on the iPad, I can at least use this as a brainstorming tool, a sketching tool, to sketch out character ideas to be printed out later on and then referred to as I work on paper again. And for that, it's terrific because you could get this kind of really soft, lush style with it very naturally. Can you get the crisp kind of cel-shaded style that I like to work in? not without a little bit of work. Again, you know, you don't have the lasso tools that I'm really hooked on using when I'm coloring. So it's much more similar to when I work in crayon, like when I do those crayon sketches where I ink a sketch and then I'll color it in crayon and I mix the colors in this, you know, more traditional way, which is fun to do, but it's not what I would call my finished coloring style. So, you know, I had some trouble with that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Now, pros. Well, a big pro is that, you know, if I don't like where the drawing's going, there's no paper to throw out. That's nice. It can be exported as a layered PSD file. So if I get a sketch going that I'm really happy with and I want to clean it up maybe in Photoshop proper, I can just email myself the layered PSD, which is awesome. It does have some of the layer features and functionality that you find naturally in Photoshop, like locking transparent pixels, which I found immensely helpful when doing coloring work. Another thing I can link to is a character sketch that I did for a Mini Comics Dump Truck comic that I'm doing with Casey Van Heist of wintersandlavelle.com, where I sketched out a villain called the Eisenvogel. And When I was drawing the rocket pack on his back, which you really can't see that well, but it's just like sort of like two rockets kind of sticking up over his shoulders. Once I rendered the base color of the rocket, and I was thinking, well, how am I going to shade this thing? Because it's so imprecise working this way, working in this kind of crayon slash marker slash painter kind of style. I discovered, oh, you can lock the transparent pixels. Then I can just lay on, you know, some shading colors on top of this and not be too worried about it going outside of the lines, so to speak. And it does have some of the layer features and functionality of, you know, that you find in Photoshop, like turning on the multiply feature. So when I throw on my base sort of pencil sketch of the body of the character on one layer, I can color underneath and still see my line art. And you can change the opacities of the different layers and stuff. That's nice too. There are a lot of neat brushes in Sketchbook Pro that I, you know, you have a lot of choices. You're not limited very much in that. But again, I think it really comes down to, my suspicion is that this app is much more if you are used to working with traditional painting kind of style of illustration. I feel confident that I could get it to look like my traditional coloring style, my cel shaded style, but not without learning a completely new workflow, which, you know, I don't really have time to mess around with right now, but when I do these little sketches here and there on the iPad, you know, it's like I'll do a 20 minute sketch to close out my night on the thing while I'm sitting in bed. And, I'm sure I'll pick up a few new tricks. I mean, I think that's the best way to learn new software anyway, is to just do it playfully, just goof around a little bit. So as I'm working, all I'm thinking is how much I'm missing working in Photoshop, because that's what I'm used to. And I want to qualify what I say with that too, is that I'm speaking as somebody who has been using Photoshop for more than 15 years now. It's an environment that I'm very comfortable in. And so I don't know how much of this is me being old and set in my ways, and how much of this is a platform that just isn't ready yet. I don't know. But somebody pointed me at, on Twitter, somebody pointed me at this another tablet coming out called the Asus EEE tablet. It's three E's. And supposedly, I mean, I did a little research, but I couldn't verify the fact that some people were claiming that it actually has a Wacom digitizer on the screen, so that it would have pressure sensitivity with the stylus. And it's running a full version of Windows 7 on it. Not crazy about working in Windows again, having worked in Windows for a long time. You know, the last version I had was, I think, Windows 2000, back in like 2003. I don't hate Windows. It's just that I've been in the Mac ecosystem for, you know, 8 years now, and again, comfort. But the idea of having Photoshop open on a tablet, or full version of Photoshop with all those palettes open all over the place, that sounds nice to me. Being able to keep working the way I've been comfortable working, that sounds very interesting. But the tablet is $1,000. So iPad has a distinct advantage there, being $500. You know, for the base model, which is, you know, that's the one that we've got. My wife has it at any rate, and it's a pretty powerful little machine for the money. But the trade-off is that you're working in this entirely new kind of environment that if you're used to the desktop environment, oh boy, there's some learning curves there. I think there are some kinds of applications that translate very well to this device. Like, for instance, I was playing around with OmniGraffle, which is sort of a design and... it's like a mind mapping application. I know it does more than that, but the way I was playing around with it was doing sort of like, what do they call it? Like a mock-up of a website. So it's kind of like using Adobe Illustrator, kind of like vector graphics, making boxes, making geometric shapes, and like using text. And doing that with your fingers at first didn't really click with me, but then after playing for about 2 minutes with OmniGraffle, I was like, this iOS interface makes a lot of sense with certain apps. With reading things, it makes perfect sense. But with drawing, gosh, you know, there are just some thresholds that I'm going to have difficulty crossing. Working without pressure sensitivity is one of them. Not having all of my palettes available to me is another one. My suspicion as of right now is that it's probably just me having to learn a completely new way to interact with a drawing program, which I'm not against. But I would be much more enthusiastic about this if those two features, pressure sensitivity and live palettes, leaving palettes open all the time, even at the expense of losing some screen real estate. I think those would make me dive a lot more readily into it. So for now, I'm just going to keep using it as a sketching application. I'm not going to be able to translate or jump into doing any, finished illustration work. I don't feel ready to draw a comic in it just yet, not to my satisfaction. I've heard rumors that Adobe is actually working on a full-ish version of Photoshop for iOS. We'll see. That would be interesting, but again, it's going to be iOS, so there's going to be some new ways of thinking about interaction that will probably be difficult for those of us who are, once again, used to the current desktop sort of interface. The bottom line is that I do think drawing on the screen is definitely the future for digital drawing. Whether it's working on a Cintiq or working on the Asus EEE tablet or whatever other tablets come out, you know, the different Android tablets coming out. I do think that is, it just makes perfect sense. There's no question that it's a good idea. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens in the next couple of years, I guess, with these tablets. I just don't feel that it's fully baked yet. I feel like the fact that we have to work around certain things that make working on the desktop so easy. So it's like it's a checks and balances game, right? It's like you gain the sort of wonderful analogy of drawing on paper by drawing on the screen, but you lose some other aspects of that work really, really well on the desktop. So anyway, them's my thoughts right now. So I guess I should answer the question. Should you go out and get an iPad and start drawing on it? If you were an artist like me who deals almost exclusively in black and white lines and colors after the fact, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's still time to wait, because I do not think of that iPad lovingly and like, oh, I can't wait to draw on it today. I really feel like I'm forcing myself to learn this interface right now, just because I feel like it's important for me to know it. And I'm doing it in a spirit of play, so it's not like high on my agenda. You know, I'm much happier just breaking out a piece of Bristol and working that way for now. So if you're like me, then no, I'm going to say, like, if you don't have the extra money, the discretionary income, and you're looking for a device to draw on, I don't know if it's the one. See, there you go. I'm not an Apple fanboy after all. I do love iOS devices. Don't get me wrong. I'm recording on one right now, and I think it's fantastic that I've got this mobile production studio in my pocket all the time. That's very, very exciting to me. But that one thing, that holy grail of digital devices, drawing, that's what I'm really super excited about. And once somebody fixes or solves that problem, man, it's going to be a glorious day for artists everywhere. Now, if you were an artist who... you don't mind picking up a box full of paints and working that way, whether it's watercolor or acrylics or oils, then I think that this thing, it's got something. It's really there for those kinds of artists. So again, mixed bag. It depends on what you want out of your work. It depends on if you have any extra discretionary income. Am I willing to shell out $1,000 for the Asus thing? No, I think that that's a little bit of, I could get a full desktop for that and probably do a lot more robust stuff on it, have a lot more screen real estate to do the stuff I want to do. And two is I'm just not crazy about the idea of leaving the Mac ecosystem again. You know, it's like it's once they got you, they got you. And whether or not you've drank the Kool-Aid, it's just that you get comfortable in whatever environment that you work in. And that's what I've just outlined here. One of the struggles of being comfortable in a certain environment and having to learn something new. So as I discover more about working on this thing, as I, if I figure out any tricks to get my work looking the way I want it, I'll be sure to share them with you guys on this podcast and on the Art and Story podcast proper. But those are my thoughts today on the iPad. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. And thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We couldn't do it without you. Your support gives us the time to do this. You justify our time and our investment. You guys have cast with your dollars, with your support, you've voted to make these different shows, Thunder Punch Daily, High Adventure Daily, Mark of the Beast, Art and Story Supreme. You've made these, you've voted these shows into existence. So we thank you for that. It's a wonderful experience to know, to have people standing behind you saying, we believe in what you do. I read a quote not too long ago from, it was one of those kind of inspirational quotes, but it's like, every time I start feeling rotten about myself, I try to remind myself there are people out there who believe in me. And we actually have real hard evidence of that through your support of this thing. So that's why it means a lot to me, and that's why I thank you guys every episode. So I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody,
being the most powerful man in the universe isn't all that makes He-Man such a great hero. Being strong is fine, but there's something even better. In today's story, He-Man used something even more powerful than his muscles to beat Skeletor. You know what it was? If you said his brain, you were right. And just like a muscle, your brain is something you can develop to give yourself great power.